I want to invite you this morning to open up your Bibles. We are going to be in the Gospel of John, chapter 20. And we're going to pick up our story where we left off last week, beginning in verse 19. And this story is written by a man named John. John was one of the disciples of Jesus, or a student of Jesus. They believe he was the youngest of the disciples, maybe 10 years old when he was hanging out with Jesus, which means he got pretty close to Jesus, right? That Jesus looked over him, took care of him. Actually, he described himself as the one that Jesus loved. And I love that, that he knew that Jesus had so loved him, he could declare, I'm the one that Jesus loved. And that's true for you. That's true for me as well. He actually knew it. Well, John later recorded the stories of Jesus, at least some of them, because there's too many to record. But one of those stories is the resurrection that we read last week. And then the day of the resurrection, we're going to pick up on that evening, beginning in verse 19 of the Gospel of John. On the evening of the first day of the week, when the disciples were together, with the doors locked for fear of the Jewish leaders, Jesus came and stood among them and said, "Peace be with you." After he said this, he showed them his hands and side. The disciples were overjoyed when they saw the Lord. Again, Jesus said, "Peace be with you. As the Father has sent me, I am sending you." And with that, he breathed on them and said, "Receive the Holy Spirit. If you forgive anyone's sins, their sins are forgiven. If you do not forgive them, they are not forgiven." Now Thomas, one of the 12, was not with the disciples when Jesus came. So the other disciples told him, "We have seen the Lord." But he said to them, "Unless I see the nail marks in his hands and put my finger where the nails were and put my hand into his side, I will not believe." A week later, his disciples were in the house again and Thomas was with them. Though the doors were locked, Jesus came and stood among them and said, "Peace be with you." Then he said to Thomas, "Put your finger here. See my hands. Reach out your hand and put it into my side. Stop doubting and believe." Thomas said to him, "My Lord and my God." Then Jesus told him, "Because you have seen me, you have believed. Blessed are those who have not seen and yet have believed." Jesus performed many other signs in the presence of his disciples, which are not recorded in this book. But these are written that you may believe that Jesus is the Messiah, the Son of God, and that by believing you may have life in his name. John went on to write just a little bit more in his gospel, or this good news about Jesus. And he wrote something almost similar to that last section we read, only with a little more detail around it. And he said at the very end of his gospel that Jesus did many other things as well. If every one of them were written down, I suppose that even the whole world would not have room for all the books that would be written. That's an amazing thought, isn't it? That if we were to record everything that Jesus did when he was just here on earth, all the signs and the wonders, the miracles, the amazing conversations he had, the way that he treated others and entered into relationship with others, how he moved. If we recorded everything that was him, there's so much good that could have been written that the world itself wouldn't have enough space for the books that would be written about him. Clearly, John thought much of the one that thought much of him. Clearly, John loved the one that loved him so well. I want to say to any of you that are here for a second time, maybe you came last week for your very first time, I just want to say welcome back to you. And if you don't know me, my name's Greg. I'm one of the pastors here. And as we jump into this story today, I want to just set the frame work for who this church is for you that have come back for the second time. And I want to say this, that the first time we say this around here, like your first time here, you're welcome to come as our guest. We might treat you as something more than that, because we have the saying around here that the second time that you come, you belong to us and we belong to you. And that's how we feel about you. And I hope that you feel that way about us as well. I hope that you can sense that among here, that this is the place where you can belong. And for those of you that have been traveling maybe this week and you're back from spring break, welcome back. Hope you had a great Easter with your family and your friends and made some good memories. And I just want you to notice that we ordered up some rain this past week and washed off the roads that you could come back so you don't get your car dirty going down the road. You are welcome for that. We suffered this week for you so that you could have that. And we are super excited about the fact that things are just getting more beautiful out there. I mean, for me, I look at what was even a week ago. And if you were away, certainly we were here watching it happen. But you had to notice, man, West Michigan looks different. It went from dull and dark and kind of not very pretty and dirty out there to it's cleaned up and the flowers are popping and the colors are there. And life is coming back to what felt or looked like death out there. And the birds are singing. And I just love this time of year. One of the reasons, maybe the reason, that I love this time of year the most is because of last week. Because this is the time of year where we remember, well, the most important, historic, life-altering, earth-changing event that ever happened. And we're talking about the resurrection of Jesus Christ. Christ breaking forth from that tomb. And when I think about that, around this time of year, it always takes me back to my time in prison. And I said I wasn't going to say that this way second service. I was going to fix that for you. What I mean by that is my time volunteering in prison, all right? So I volunteered for years in prison, and I preached there. And I would go in once a month and preach. And this time of year always drags me back to that because it was so electric in the worship service at this time of year. And I don't know if you've ever had that experience in worship. I hope so. That you step into a worship service and it just feels different. It feels like maybe it's you or it's me where you step into a worship service and you just need a word from God, or you just want to get in the presence of God, or you had a bad week, or you actually blew it in some area and you just needed grace to soak over you. And you step in and the singing or the preaching or whatever in the service, just the presence of God, it feels thicker and it moves better in such a way that your life just senses something different going on. I don't know if you've ever had that experience, but often that's what it was like when I went into the prison to preach. And once a month with those guys, and especially this time of year, because those guys that were in there, the 300 or 400 guys that called that their church, and I was one of four pastors that oversaw that congregation, those guys were so hungry for the gospel at this time of year. They wanted to know, is that resurrection thing real? They weren't playing, wondering about some chocolate bunny or some Easter thing. They want to know, do dead things come back to life? Those guys who blew it in the public arena, those guys whose reputation got tainted by that, those guys who blew up relationships that really, really, really mattered to them, those guys that found themselves in a place where they lost some freedom, they wanted to know, is this real or not? Is there life that can actually come after what feels like death? Is there repair that can come after rupture? Is there any kind of healing that can come after a brokenness? I want to know, after things have been lost, can they be redeemed and restored? So I was in prison. It was a couple Sundays or a Sunday after Easter, about 5 years ago, and I was preaching a message there, and the church in the prison, it was one of those kind of churches, like, I didn't have to say much, and they would already talk back, so it was a talk-back kind of church. I'd get up and go, hey, morning, or evening, guys, and they'd good evening. And they'd talk back to me, and I'd be like, I came tonight because I wonder, is anybody hungry for the gospel tonight? And they'd be like, yes! And they'd be shouting back to me. And so I got more amens and more thank you, Lords, and more yes out of that group of guys than any other place I've ever preached on a consistent basis. And it's a little bit, when you're a preacher and the congregation starts to do that, it's a little bit like saying sick 'em to a rabid dog, man, because I'm like getting fired up there. And before long, I said something that night about 5 years ago in prison. I'd never thought before. Like, they dragged it out of me. It's kind of like, it's your fault, man. You guys were firing me up. And I said something I'd never thought before. And after I said it, even as I was saying that, I'm like, what am I saying here? And when it came out, I went, wow, I just said that. I looked at this group of guys, and the service was one of those services. Like, for whatever reason, it was electric. And I think the main reason was they were so hungry for good news and wanted to know, can there be restoration for me and redemption for me and life for me? Is there hope beyond this for me? And as I was preaching, the room was just electric. And I said to the group, clearly, these walls and that fence with barbed wire and those bars are meant to keep you in, but they have no power to keep the Holy Ghost out. And the place erupted. These guys were on their feet, high-fiving, running all over the room, left their rows. And I'm like, I think I just started a prison riot here. Like, this is not good. You're like, and I'm looking, I didn't know what to do at that moment. And I really, honestly, I thought, I don't know if you can say what I just said in prison. I don't know if this is good. And at that moment, I thought, I don't know if I'll ever be invited back in here again. But what was going on is this. These guys were sensing that God was for them. He was there with them. And all the stuff that was meant to keep them in, it had no ability to keep God's Spirit from moving inside of them and inside of that place. They wanted to hear a resurrection story. And not just a story. Because if that story doesn't have an intersection with my story or your story, with their story, then it remains a really cool story. I mean, we would still probably tell it, right? That God came into this world. Yes, he did. And he showed up in the person of Jesus, and he walked on this earth, and then he went around and did some amazing things for a handful of people, and then did this really horrible thing. They beat him, and they flogged him, and they ripped flesh out of him, and he suffered enormous pain until they hoisted him on a cross, and he suffocated on that cross, gasping for air, and finally let go of life itself. That God came into this world, and we killed him, and they put him in a grave. But you know what? God decided he didn't want to stay dead, and he rose again from the grave. And we could say, incredible story. But if that story doesn't meet up with your story, if there's not an intersection of that story with your story, my story, and those guys' story, then it just remains a story about what God did for himself. But it's more than that. It's way more than that. And this is what these guys were so hungry about. They wanted to know, is this story just a one-off? Because if it's not a one-off, then it matters for me. Is this story just about Jesus coming out of the grave, or is it something more? Because if it's something more, then that matters for me. And the truth is, it's not just a one-off. And he was the first fruits of the resurrection. Jesus actually said, I am the resurrection. I am life. I'm not just talking about something I did. I'm talking about who I am. And if you live and believe in me, even as I came up out of that grave, so too, you too will live again, and then you will never die. If this is a reality to be experienced, if this is a power that moved in the world in such a way that it shows us that God was for us, remains for us, and always will be for us, if it proves that his power is unmatched, and this one that is for us, is for us and will be for us, then the question begs, what can God not do? He defeated death itself. He conquered the grave itself, which means there is nothing that was or is or ever will be that will ever be able to stop him from doing that which he desires to do. So with that, it's the evening of the resurrection. And the disciples are where? Behind locked doors. They bolted that thing shut. Good reason. They witnessed what happened to Jesus. They knew he got dragged off. He was illegally tried. They knew he was crucified. And they knew. There's a real possibility here, guys. We might be next. And for fear of the Jewish leaders, they went and locked themselves behind doors. But there was one that didn't. There was one that was actually making her way to the tomb, and her name was Mary. She was from a place called Magdala. And Mary was, actually, I want you to have a picture of something that I didn't quite catch years ago until I was reading through the Gospel of Luke chapter 8, and I went, wow. That if you have a picture in your mind that Jesus traveled around with 12 disciples, that's a good picture, but you don't have it big enough yet. There was actually more than just the 12 that were traveling around with Jesus, because the Gospel of Luke says that there were women that were traveling with as well. Those women were women that were healed of diseases. They were healed of evil spirits. Mary had 7 different spirits that were in her that Jesus healed, and they traveled with the disciples. Mary made her way that morning over to the tomb, and she found the tomb in such a way that it begged a question for her, the same question I believe any one of us would have asked. She asked, because she found the stone rolled back, she found the tomb empty, and here's the reality, let's get real on it, dead people don't walk. If you want to remove something from a tomb, you're going to have to get a live person to remove the dead person. So she wondered, logic, where's Jesus? Who took him? And the response back, almost immediately, this wave started coming over her. And she was, maybe surprised is too weak a word, shocked. Because there was Jesus alive and speaking her name. N.T. Wright wrote a book called Surprised by Hope. The biggest shock of all here is that a dead person is actually up and he's alive. And Mary, again, seems too weak a word to use the word surprise. But whatever's happening to her at that moment is like reframing, like, whoa, he's back and he's out of the grave and he's alive, and go tell the brothers. And so she makes her way over to the disciples and their locked door, and she bangs on the door and begins to tell them, I cannot hardly believe what I just saw, but I did, and I held his feet for a minute. He told me to come talk to you, and he's on the way. Jesus is alive. He's alive. And what do they do with that news? Did they believe her? Maybe. There were a number of things pitched against them actually believing. Because we just read, even Thomas, after all of them said, Jesus is up out of the grave, Thomas is like, man, I so want to believe that. But I'm going to have to see with my own eyes. And did they believe Mary? Again, I don't know, maybe. But here's what's pitched against it. There was something really messed up in that culture. And one of the things that was really messed up in that culture is that a woman couldn't even testify in a court of law. Like, what? They had so wrongly seen how we are created, male and female, in the image of God, that somehow they thought a woman's testimony was lesser than a man's testimony. Messed up. But that was permeated in the culture. Did Jesus liberate those disciples from that? Maybe. Maybe he did. But we don't know if they actually believed at that moment that Jesus was up. They believed that she believed it and she was speaking it. And then later that evening, Jesus stepped into the room. Same room. Door still locked. they believe her now. Because there he is, standing before them fully alive. And what does Jesus do? He speaks, peace. I've been working for it. These 3 days that felt silent haven't been silent. I've been working for your peace. He spoke the word shalom, which at its deepest meaning is this: may there be nothing broken. May there be nothing missing in you. I've been working for that. He who knew no sin became sin that you might become the very righteousness of God. This is what Paul wrote about the work of Jesus on the cross. The one who knew no sin took on your sin. The prophet spoke of it years and years and hundreds of years before, that by his stripes, by his wounds, we would get healed, that our transgressions would be laid upon him, and that we would get healed through him, peace. Anything that's broken, may it be healed. I've been working for that. Anything that's missing, may it get restored in you. I've been working for that. Peace. And when you speak the word shalom, actually what you mean is all that I am, may it be leveraged for that happening in you. And Jesus spoke to them shalom. And then he did this really weird thing. He breathed on them. You're like, what is he doing? What's this breath that he's... And there are so many stories that we could go to this morning and talk. I mean, we could go on for a long time on this stuff. Talk about these places where Jesus just did these things that made people think, like, who does this? Like when he's on a boat and he begins to speak to the waves. Who talks to waves? Who talks to the chaos of water and says, calm? Who speaks peace into water? Who tells water that you are full of chaos right now? Order! And it goes to dead calm. Only the one who in the very dawn of creation spoke into the chaos and brought order out of it does that. And the disciples said, who is this that's in the boat with us? Who is this that is in the boat with us right now? Is this just a man or is he more? Because only God can do this. Jesus breathed on them. What is this breath? Receive the Holy Spirit, is what he said. Life, may it come your way. Who else did this but God? At the very dawn of creation, you see him speaking life into everything that is, and he takes a mound of dirt, and what does he do to the dirt? He breathes life into the dirt, and the dirt stands up. It's alive. There's this prophet, his name is Ezekiel, and he's in this valley, and it's the valley of Elah, where there was a battle that took place, and the battle left carnage everywhere. Dead bodies were left in that valley. They were picked clean. The sun had scorched them. Have you ever seen a bone that is parched by the sun and it's cracked and there's no life in it? This is the valley full of bones. And God spoke to the prophet. Prophet, can these bones live? I don't know. If you're asking me if I can bring life to this valley, no. I can't do that. I have no power, but I know you. I know you. You spoke and the universe came into existence. I know you. You spoke and the water split. I know you. You spoke and the Egyptian army was reduced. I know you. You rained down food from heaven to feed your people when they were out. I know you. You made quail so plentiful that they had food to eat. You are their protector and provider. You alone know, Lord, can these bones live? I ask you. Speak to the bones, prophet. Bones, live. Live. Bone began to attach to bone, and then muscle and tendon, and eventually skin and hair. And there lay dead corpses all over the valley. God said, call forth to the four winds from the east and the west and north and the south, the Ruach, which is the Old Testament word for spirit. Ruach, come. And life was breathed. The breath came into them and they lived. There was this guy Jesus showed up late for his funeral. His name was Lazarus. And he showed up at that funeral. And everybody's weeping at the funeral. And Jesus joins in because this was his friend. And he's crying. And then he spoke. 4 days he's been in the tomb. It's too late, they said. And he said, Lazarus, come out. And Lazarus came out. And he lived again. The breath of life was back in his lungs. Jesus stepped into the room. You guys don't look all right. I've been working for your healing, for your redemption, for your restoration. For the Father sent me into the world for shalom for the world, and I now speak it over you. I've been working it over you. Now I speak it. I was for you. I am for you. I will always be for you. And life, receive it and go and bring it to the world. What a story. The intersection of Jesus' story with their story, meeting up in that place right behind a locked door that had no ability to keep God's Spirit out. I received a phone call. It was about 2.5 years ago from my friend Dave. And Dave and I got to know each other really well in prison because he was eventually the worship leader there, not right away, but over time, God did such a transformative work in Dave's life that he ended up leading the church. And so I got to partner with him in the gospel message of bringing good news to those guys that were in prison. And Dave called me and said, I got released, man. He'd been in for 15 years, or as Dave would tell you, it was 5,483 days because he counted every single one of them. And so Dave came to church a couple years ago. And the two of us, afterwards, we went down to Vitale's just down the road here. And after a couple hours together, we were just getting started. And the conversation, as you can imagine, it's what I've been talking about. It's the best news of all. And he began to share with me the moment where God just captured his heart. And in that place where he had blown it, in that place where he just felt like, man, I need to know, is this story actually ever going to intersect with my story? Is there anything? And I've shared many times here. I've shared it with Dave. I've shared it with the guys in prison. I actually think we all have the same story. Exact same story. Mary of Magdala, she had a story. Those disciples had a story. Jesus encountered one person after another that had a story. You have a story. I have a story. We all have the same story. The only difference in our stories is just detail. That's it. We just have different detail. And he was telling me some of the detail of his story and how in a worship service, in a moment, in that prison, in that place that had no ability to keep God's Spirit from moving his direction, he sensed the power of God's Spirit coming, restoring, redeeming, breathing life. He didn't use those words, but breathing life back into dead places inside of him again. And we didn't get done that afternoon together, and we've been speaking since, and just maybe it was a week and a half ago, 2 weeks ago, I just called him up and said, Dave, how you doing, man? And we talked for a while, and it was about 10:30 at night when we finally hung up with each other and spent maybe an hour on the phone, and we talked resurrection, because this is the thing that matters. Do dead things come to life? Does redemption happen? Can there be restoration from any place where there's been a rupture? Can there be hope where it feels somewhat hopeless? And he said, I'm not done yet. I'm so grateful for where God has brought me, and it gives me hope for where things are headed. But I'm still longing for a relationship to be put back together again that just isn't there. So we prayed resurrection prayer and ask for life to get breathed into that again, that the dance might continue, this dance of grace. And so to you here today that are in that place where you're feeling some rupture that needs to be repaired, to you who are needing some hope, where you've sensed to be hopeless, to you who are in that place that are wondering, is it possible for me with my story to be able to hear your story is mine too. It's our story. Is it possible that there could be a dance of grace for me in relationship with God? I want to say that yes is the answer. And this story points to it. And there's one story after another in the Bible. And there are so many other stories that John wrote about and the other ones that he didn't write about and said if we had enough pen and enough ink and enough paper and if we had enough space on planet Earth to actually write everything that Jesus did, all the stories that could be told. And I just want to raise with you this one question here. Why are all these stories told? It's amazing stories of what Jesus did. Why are they told? I think for at least two reasons. One is to show us how God counts. That he actually counts by one. That there was this one woman who lived for a long time with an illness, 12 years, and no doctors could fix it. And Jesus stepped in and did a miracle of healing over her, brought shalom to her body because she mattered. Counts by one. There's a guy named Bartimaeus that cried out, "Son of David, have mercy on me." And Jesus said, "What do you need, Bartimaeus?" He counts by one. There's a story of a leper. There's a story of a guy with a withered hand. There's a story of a person that was lowered through the roof and was healed. There's a story of a little girl that was brought back to life again. There's a story of Lazarus I just told. All of these are a story of a person and that he knows them by name and story and cares about the individual gives me great hope that he actually cares about you too, individually, where you sit with your story, no matter what that story is, and he cares about me. And also this, that these stories are so amazing and so powerful that they tell us that God is capable of doing anything he sets his mind and his heart to. There is nothing our God cannot do. I want to invite Gil to come out here. Gil Ostring is one of our worship leaders, and I want to have him finish up the message here today. Gil and I have known each other for all 10 years here. I knew of his family when I was growing up. Love you, brother. And I got to know Gil quite quickly because I knew a bit of his story when I was growing up. I knew of him. Did not know him until the last decade here, but I know Gil well enough that he was singing a song up here years ago, but he was singing a song up here, and it was Amazing Grace. And he hit this line, "Amazing Grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me." And I actually smiled down there and kind of chuckled. I'm like, "You're speaking the truth right now." So I made my way up to the platform, and I just said, "Hey, Gil, before you walk off, I want to ask you a question, man. As you're singing that song about a wretch, I know your story. And that was true about you." And you went, "Yeah, you weren't such a saint yourself, Greg." Exactly. And so, yeah, we went back and forth. Like, yeah, we both have stories, like really good stories. We got a lot of stories. And then the other time that I came up and you were singing a song. And it just touched me because I knew what you were going through with your wife's cancer. And how, and it doesn't always go this way. You know, God is able. I don't know how he responds all the time. But in this case, he stepped in and restored your wife's health. And, we teared up over here, and he told a bit of the story. So I called Gil yesterday because I knew what song this last song was. And we spent some time talking together. And, I'm going to let you take it, and then maybe I'll wrap up at the end. But okay. Share just a little bit about the song.
The song, when he asked me about that, I'm looking into that song. The first thing I could think of was that it reminded me of the first song that was calling me. And it, just like this song, it calls to us and it calls to you wherever you are. There's so many different levels of Christian faith, and there's just one of those songs. And I had a song that back in the day when I was singing in a lot of the bars. I was in a rock band. and somebody handed me a tape with some music on it. I never heard of Petra before, but they said, Elizabeth, give this a listen. So I popped it in during a workout at home, and the music, I mean, it brought me to tears. I found myself crying halfway through my workout, and I'm like, whoa, what was that? And I know now, and I know what it was. It was the Spirit, the Holy Spirit working in my life, calling me, because there was things going on. Like we talked about our road that could have been. And I think that I was on a road that was certainly not the road that I needed to be on. There were songs that we did, and after that, there were songs where I told him, I said, I'm just not going to do these songs, you know, like Highway to Hell, and some songs like that. And I just said, I can't do these songs, because if I'm singing this song, then I'm probably on that highway, and I don't want to be on that highway. So as it progressed, I decided that I wanted to sing. I still wanted to use my talent, but I wanted to use it in church. And so I still remember this day, the first song that I sang in church, and it was pretty, my dad would say, peppy. After I got done, my dad was, he came up to me, bless his heart. He says, hey, you were testing the water there a little bit, weren't you, son? And I said, yeah, but that's me. That's what brought me here. And so I'm going to share that too. I'm going to bring that to those that might have that. And so this song does the same thing. It calls to me. And I just wanted to make sure, I wanted to say really what it did mean to me, more than just a song. When we're up here singing, these are wonderful people up here, and just to be a part and to be able to sing and to share things that we do up here, I need it in my life. I need it. So this next song, I hope you enjoy it. I hope it touches you and calls you today, because it can call you again and again. It doesn't mean that you do it one time, well, that's it. No, I think, and you and I talked about it. We said, we get saved all the time. You know, there's just times when we get casual, and then all of a sudden something, you know, brings us back. And it could be a song, or it could be something that's going on in your life, but the song will bring you back. It calls to you. Hmm.
Yeah. Gil and I spent a little bit of time talking about our stories, and one of the things that we're not going to hide, we had a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah.
Doing a lot of stupid stuff.
Absolutely.
So it was... I'm not saying it wasn't fun, but I do think about this, not a lot, but every once in a while, I just think about how grateful I am that I got rescued, and to think about the trajectory, and we spent some time talking about the trajectory of our lives and where we could be today if it weren't for the fact that He breathed hope into us when we were hopeless, and He brought healing when we were broken, and He spoke and breathed life, shalom, over each of us, and yeah, I'm super grateful for Him doing that and to be in partnership with you too. Love you, brother.